Okay, so we started with studying general superhero, and then we moved to a chiral superhero. Right? So the chiral superhero is the one that's being manipulated by Diva. So this is chiral superhero. And then there is an anti-chiral superhero, which is being by the one that's manipulated by Diva. So this is anti-chiral superhero. And we showed that we can start with an arbitrary function, so which has a name, a calipotential. And so a calipotential is an arbitrary function of chiral and anti-chiral superhero. There can be a bunch of them. And so what we showed last time, that we can automatically generate SUSY invariant action if we'll just say that our action is an integral d4 theta of the scalar potential, right, phi bar, right? So this is the same as d2 theta bar, k of phi bar. And the reason, the sense in which it is SUSY invariant is that the SUSY variation of the action, okay, so if we do a SUSY variation of the action, well, okay, so here is d4x as well, so we have d4x, then we have d4 theta, and then a SUSY variation, so a calipotential is just some general superfield, it's a function on a superspace, and so the SUSY variation of this is given epsilon and epsilon, sorry, psi and psi bar are infinitesimal translations along the Grassmann coordinates in the superspace. So this would be a SUSY variation. And so what we showed is that this will pick highest component, and a variation of the highest component is a total derivative. So it's a total spatial space-time derivative. So in particular, this would have been an integral del mu of something, and that's why it's a boundary term. And so if we construct an action in this way, we will get automatically actions which are invariant under SUSY transformation. And then what we noted that actually, a calipotential is not uniquely specified given an action. And so in particular, we can start with a given calipotential, and then we can add to it a function of only chiral superfield, or say an arbitrary function of only anti-chiral superfield. So repeat the procedure, and so this calipotential and this one will lead to the same SUSY invariant action. And precisely for that reason, we noted that we cannot construct an action just using chiral superfields. In order to construct the simplest scalar potential that would give rise to a non-trivial action, we need both chiral and anti-chiral superfield. And so we looked at the simplest example when our calipotential was just this quadratic form in chiral and anti-chiral superfields. And so when we evaluated, the integral d4 theta, and so once we did this, we got the Lagrangian of our invariant SUSY invariant action. So a chiral superfield, right, So let me remind you. So it's a function of y and theta. And so it has an expansion. So there is a complex scalar phi. Then there is a root 2 theta psi as a function of y plus theta squared f of y, right? So this was complex scalar. This was Weyl fermion. And this was auxiliary field. And the reason why it is auxiliary, because if we do this, particularly for this scalar potential, and the statement actually holds true for any scalar potential, then the Lagrangian will take this form, okay, plus I del mu psi bar sigma bar mu psi plus f bar. And so you can see that this f is a non-dynamical field, and it can be eliminated exactly using equations of motion. So non-dynamical field. Okay? So where we ended last time is that we noted that when we use this approach to constructing supersymmetric actions, we cannot get interacting field theories which involves non-derivative interactions. So when we use d4 theta k in order to construct the Susi Lagrangians, we cannot get non-derivative interactions. Okay? So we can get interactions that involve derivatives, and I mentioned this later today, but we cannot get something that would be, say, a supersymmetric extension of lambda phi to the fourth quantum field theory, just using this approach. And so so the situation is sort of opposite what we had in quantum mechanics, right? So there, we could easily construct interactions, and we had problems of constructing kinetic terms. So here, it's reverse. Fortunately, it's not that bad, and there is a simple solution to this problem. And that's what we're going to do now. So we're going to discuss superpotential and interactions in Susi models. Okay? All right, so very good. So let's see. So I wrote a chiral superfield there. And I guess one thing I want to remind you is that the coordinate y is a chiral coordinate on superspace, right? So it's introduced in such a way that d bar alpha dot on y mu equal to 0. So it's annihilated by d bar. And so the claim is that, let's just go slowly and step by step. So suppose we have a phi of y is chiral superfield, right? So which implies the d, it's a chiral superfield, so it must depend on y and theta, acted on phi. So it's annihilated, it had this expansion. So what I want to look at the Lagrangian. Okay, so W is an index that we will use for a superpotential. So this is a part of the Lagrangian that we will interpret as coming from a superpotential. So, but for us, it's just a definition. This is some Lagrangian that I want to consider, and so this is the one. This is the one that I want to look at. So this is phi of y. So I just take a chiral superfield, okay? So this is chiral superfield, and I integrate over one half of a superspace. Okay? So it's not the full integral over a superspace, because the full integral would have been d4 theta, and I integrate only over d theta coordinates. Okay? Well, so let's evaluate this integral, right? So so we have an expansion for a chiral superfield. So clearly there will be a term like this, right? So it's just f of x. So it will come once I evaluate this integral, right? D2 theta of theta squared gives me 1, and so I will have f of y, right? And actually, f of y will be f of x, because if I will try to expand it, there will be 3 thetas or more, right? So is that clear? Just from that piece. I claim that there is nothing else, plus nothing else. Okay, so I claim that when I take a chiral superfield and do this integral, there will be nothing else, more precisely, nothing that's important. Let's see why that is the case. Well, so we can look, you can say, oh, we have to be careful, and there will be this term as well, right? So for example, there will be this term, psi of y, and it will contribute to the integral as well, which is true, right? So this is an integral d2 theta, root 2 theta, and then I have psi of x plus I theta sigma mu theta bar. But in order for that thing to contribute, what I would need to do, I would need to Taylor expand in this argument. Okay? And so the instance I do this Taylor expansion, this integral will become, so I will have root 2 del mu psi, right? Del mu psi theta, okay? And then I have I theta sigma mu theta bar, okay? D2 theta. But it's clear that this integral is a total derivative. Right? So we see the field that will enter only with a derivative. So even though this term will contribute to this integral, but it will contribute as a total derivative. So from the perspective of the action, it will not bring up anything interesting. So that's why, so would not contribute to Susi action. So I can forget about it. So for the same reason, the first term, so I have a scalar phi of y, right? So it will contribute, right? So the, in particular, the contribution will come from a second, there will be a second term in a Taylor series expansion, which will be of a type 1 over 2 factorial, del mu phi. Those guys depend on x. There is no del mu phi. Otherwise, it would not have been a total derivative. There will be del mu phi, and then there will be I theta sigma mu theta bar, I theta sigma nu theta bar. Okay, and this term will contribute because I have 2 thetas. I integrate over half a superspace, but it will be a total derivative as well. Okay, this guy. So the lesson here is that if I take a chiral superfield and I integrate over half of a superspace, what I am getting is the highest component of this chiral superfield. As long as I'm going to think of whatever I got, a Lagrangian in my action, because the corrections are total derivatives. Okay. So any questions?
So now, in order to construct a different type of contributions to
supersymmetric action, what we're going to do, we are going to show that SUSY variation of F, delta SUSY of the F term of the chiral superfield is total derivative. Okay. So if that is the case, then the claim is that, remember that chiral superfields form a nice algebra. The product and sum of chiral superfields was a chiral superfield as well. And so what I can do, I can take W of phi, which is an arbitrary function of just a chiral superfield. There can be many of them. The important thing is that they must be chiral superfields. Then I can construct the new supersymmetric actions, so new SUSY actions, by integrating this function W over half of the superspace, W of phi I. So because W of phi I is a chiral superfield, this thing is a highest component, right? So what we will get? We will get the highest component of this complicated chiral superfield. And what we will show shortly is that delta W phi is total derivative. And so that will be a valid contribution to action in order to get supersymmetric action. So I'm going to stop here and sort of just ask if the logic is clear, what we're doing.
All right. So the only thing that we have to
worry is that typically when you do this analysis, you will get a complex answer. So that's a complex. So the contribution coming from a superpotential, so this thing has a name. So this arbitrary function of chiral superfields is a superpotential. Okay. And so, as I told you, this integral will give us something that we will see what it will give us in a little bit. But it will give us something that depends just on the space-time coordinates. However, I said that in generically it will be a complex field. So what we have to do is, in order to have our Lagrangian real, we have to take a complex conjugate. Well, a Hermitian conjugate. So I have this combination plus a Hermitian conjugate of it. All right, and then that would be a valid contribution. All right, so any questions?
Good, so in order to complete this, and then
that will be our starting point from that, I need to show you that a SUSY variation of the highest component of chiral superfield is a total derivative. Okay, so let's show this now. So phi of y and theta is chiral superfield, and so what we are doing, we are looking at SUSY variation of this chiral superfield. Okay. And what we will need the highest component. We will need to see how does the highest component transform under SUSY transformations. So this is epsilon q plus epsilon bar. Q bar acted on our chiral superfield, right? So this is psi alpha q alpha minus psi alpha dot q bar alpha dot phi. So that equals psi alpha, and I'm just substituting the expression for the supersymmetry variation. So this is del over del theta alpha minus I sigma mu alpha alpha dot, theta bar alpha dot, del mu, and then there is plus, minus psi alpha dot bar, and here I have minus del over del theta bar alpha dot plus I sigma mu alpha alpha dot theta alpha del mu, and all this stuff acts on my chiral superfield. Okay, so we just need to evaluate this and look at the highest component there. All right, so let's do the algebra. So let's recall the expansion. Okay, so it takes the form. So it's phi of x plus I theta sigma mu theta bar del mu of phi plus a quarter theta squared theta bar squared phi. This is del 2 phi plus root 2 theta psi minus I over root 2 theta squared del mu psi sigma mu theta bar plus theta squared f. Okay, so now I did the expansion. I'm thinking about chiral superfield as a general superfield. Everything depends on x, theta, and theta bar. So I can just see, once I do this Susi variation, what will be a theta squared term. So I need to pick up a theta squared term. Okay, so notice that the way how the supersymmetry generators act, I either increase one power of theta or I decrease one power of theta. Since I'm interested what will happen with the theta squared term, right? So, okay, sorry, I missed one sentence to say. What we need to do, we need to extract the theta squared term because we need to know how F term varies under the supersymmetry variation. And that's the way how it enters in the general expansion for a superfield. That's why I said that it's not the highest component that we need to look at, but we need to look at the theta squared component of this variation, right? And so this theta squared component will come. So what we can do, it will come from this, right? So it will come from this if we combine it with this, right? So this will give us a theta squared component because we have one theta here and there will be one theta there. And let's see, it can come also, it can come also from this term as well, right? So all I have to do is just to act on it, on this term. So a theta bar will be killed by differentiation, and I will have theta squared left. Okay, so if you look, there is no other contribution that can show up which will have theta squared term. So if we do this algebra, well, so there are two terms, so I'm just gonna write down them, alpha dot, yes? This one? Because this will not contribute. You have four theta, right? Yeah. And you need to, we need to look to track theta squared term. Any of that thing that's doing, it's just killing you one theta. So you will be left with three theta. Yeah. But I need to look only at theta squared term, because in the general, if I look at the chiral superfield, yeah, and I ask where does the F term enter, remember that we are looking at the Susi variation of the F term. Yeah. It doesn't enter here, it enters only here. So which means that I need to look only after the Susi variation, I need to look at the term which have theta squared and nothing else, no other theta bars or anything. There will be many more terms. But that's irrelevant to the question because our question was what's the Susi variation of the actual?
They would tell us how, for example, a scalar part of the Tyrrell superfield transform, or the fermion loop transform, which is a great homework. Yes, no.
I mean, it's just because in principle you showed that the other term becomes a total derivative, but yes. You didn't show that the Susi variation of that term becomes a total derivative. I mean, presumably that would be the case anyway, and then...
No. We don't...
Or do you just say you just don't take it into the action?
Right, I see what you're saying, right? So you might want because that can be answered in a long way by keeping track of all the terms, or it can be answered in a short way. And the answer in the short way, the reason why I don't have to keep track of that, is that I know the Susi variation of a chiral superfield is a chiral superfield. So once I know that, then I know the only thing that can contribute is that. Otherwise, you are right, I should have been careful and make sure that the other things do not contribute, but we showed that the chiral superfield is closed under Susi variation. All right, very good. So then there are just these two terms, and so if we evaluate them, then they take this form, theta alpha, theta beta, root 2,
del mu psi beta. Okay, so that's one. So this is the one where we hit with the derivative to kill this one. Yep.
Question. Why, in the expansion of phi,
yeah.
Why is there theta bar terms at all?
Where does this come up?
Yeah, because...
Because y has theta bar.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. But it always will come with theta as well. All right, so this is the one that will come just with the multiplication. And then there is one that will come when we take a derivative.
Theta squared del mu psi alpha sigma mu alpha beta dot, and then I have del theta bar beta dot over del theta bar alpha dot. Those are the two terms that will contribute. And now, if you play a little bit with the algebra, you will find out that this is minus I root 2 del mu of psi sigma mu psi bar, and this times theta squared. I didn't have to do this simplification, right? Because even once I wrote this, it's clear that it's a total derivative. There are only derivatives that enter here, but well, what the heck? I did a simplification, and so we see that this is a total derivative. So we proved the statement that the Susi variation of a highest component of chiral superfield is a total derivative. And so indeed, if I take an arbitrary function of chiral superfield, evaluate it over half, the integrated over half of a superspace, I will get a nice new contributions to a supersymmetric action. All right, so any questions? Yes.
Integrate out only two of your superspace coordinates, and then you're left with theta bars.
But you don't, because right. So this is a little bit more general. So you used to have total derivatives in your action, which were just coordinates, right? But now what you are saying is that there will be a total derivative multiplied by theta bars.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But they are still total derivatives. So and theta bars are just some additional coordinates. So the point is that, at least in the bosonic coordinates in superspace, we always assume that the infinity outer fields in the dive pass. And so even the fermionic coordinates can be finite, but it doesn't matter.
That's sort of a step we have to make in order to slightly generalize what we mean by total derivatives. All right, so very good. So now, let's see, so once we know additional ways of constructing supersymmetric actions, so let's see what they will give us. And in order to do that, so let's look at arbitrary superpotential. So it's a function, by definition, of chiral superfields only, chiral superfields only. So the argument obviously doesn't work if it's a function of chiral and anti-chiral superfields. And so what we need, the integral gives the highest component of this chiral superfield. So we need to get theta squared term. So this is the integral series. We need to do Taylor series expansion. So let me just write down here as a general superfield again. Del mu phi I plus a quarter theta squared theta bar squared del 2 phi I. Then plus root 2 theta psi minus I over root 2 theta squared del mu psi I sigma mu theta bar plus theta squared fi. Okay? And so what we need to look at theta squared term in the Taylor series expansion, because that's where our contribution to associative action will come from. Okay, so how can we get theta squared term? Well, again, think of this as a Taylor series expansion, right? And so this is a variation. This is our delta when we do Taylor series expansion. So to first order, we will have del I of W. Right, by this I mean del W over del phi I, okay? So this is a function of multiple chiral superfields. So this del I of W I mean as a derivative with respect to chiral superfields, but then I have to think of this as just a function of X, right? Because I'm doing a Taylor series expansion. So where everything depends on X and I separated the Grassmann coordinates as well. And so the only term that will contribute, a theta squared term, will come here, right? So it will be fr to first order. There is no other theta squared term. There is term which contains theta squared, but it contains something else. And we don't care about that. We just care about pure theta squared term. So that's one contribution, but then there is another contribution. The contribution can come if I do second derivative, so it's del I, del j of w, right, divided by 2 factorial, and then I square this deviation from scalar phi sub I. And so the theta squared term will come, obviously, just from squaring this piece, okay? So then I will have root 2 theta psi I, theta psi j, and I need to extract the theta squared term, and this root 2 will become just 2. So, from your homework, you already know what that is. So, so theta psi I, theta psi j, okay, so this equals to minus 1/2 psi I psi j theta squared. So the answer here is del I WFI. And then I have twos will cancel, but I have minus 1/2 del I double del I del J W. Okay. And then I have psi J term. Okay. Good. So any questions?
So are there more?
Sorry?
Can we Taylor expand this further?
Yes, we can. So if we Taylor expand further, so what we did, so we have a function f of x plus delta x, right? So it's f of x, but it doesn't contain theta terms, because theta terms are just only here. So then we have delta x over 1 factorial f prime of x plus delta x squared over 2 factorial f double prime of x, right? So the third one would have delta x cubed. Okay, that already tells me that I have to cube delta x. But delta x has at least one theta. Okay? So what I'm saying is that delta x cubed over 3 factorial has at least 3 theta.
So delta
x is what is on the line. So I think of this as x. That's a Boolean.
Yeah.
And then we do Taylor series expansion in the shape, which involves Fanoni coordinates. Right. So it doesn't necessarily vanish, because the 3 thetas might come as 2 thetas and 1 theta bar. But it's irrelevant to us, because at the end of the day, we just look at the theta square. So one thing that should have ruled your suspicion is that here's psi's are fermions. Okay. So how come this is obviously symmetric? So how come that is not zero? The reason why this is not zero, because you have to remember that alpha chi is the same as chi alpha, even though they are Grassmann variables. Our summation convention take care of additional minus sign. Okay. All right. So very good.
Good. So now we can write down. The general action. What it will look like. So we're going to take our Kala potential to be a simplest possible form. It's phi phi bar. But then we will take W of phi arbitrary. And so our supersymmetric Lagrangian will take a form of the integral integral over full superspace of a Keller potential plus an integral over half a superspace of a superpotential plus a Hermitian conjugate of the last term. So if we collect everything that we did, okay, so there was a kinetic term, so it's del phi I, del phi bar, okay. Then I have plus I del mu psi I bar sigma bar mu psi I. Notice that I don't care for now with lower and upper indices, right? Okay, so I guess what I'm doing is I'm doing this. So this is just a summation of the, so I have different flavors, if you wish, of chiral superfield, and each of them have a simpler scalar potential. So it will be just a sum of the Lagrangians. Okay, so I don't care about whether I indices up or down, that doesn't matter now. It will become important in a more complicated example we discuss after that. All right, so there is a scalar piece, there is a wild fermion piece, and then there are F terms, Fi, Fi bar. Okay, so those are the terms that will come from here. And then there will be a terms that will come from a superpotential, and we computed it there. So it will be del I W F I plus del I W F I bar. Okay, so there will be a Hermitian conjugate of that. And then there are fermionic pieces, right? Minus 1/2 del I del j w psi I psi j minus 1/2 del I del j w psi I psi j bar. Right, very good. So this is our most general supersymmetric action. Well, not most general, the one with a sort of simplified Keller potential. So what I want to do, I want to look at the scalar part. More precisely, let's look at the bosonic part of that action. Let's look at the bosonic part. So the bosonic part, so I have a genetic term for a complex scalar, right? And then there are F terms, Fi, Fi bar, and then there is del I W phi I, del I W phi I bar. Okay, so that's, as far as scale is concerned, that's all what we have. So again, F I do not have a kinetic term. Moreover, they enter quadratically. So they enter into Lagrangian. They enter into Lagrangian quadratically. So what I can do, I can just integrate them out, and this procedure is exact quantum mechanically. So we can integrate Fi's out, and this process is exact even quantum mechanically at the level of pass integral. So in practice, that integration out means that we need to solve the equation of motion and plug in the equation of motion into action. Okay? So if we look at the Lagrangian, the equation of motion for the phi i's, there is no kinetic term, so the equation of motion will be just a variation of the Lagrangian with respect to phi I. So it gives me phi I bar plus del I W, and it must be equal to zero. And then there is an equation for a complex conjugate. Okay, so this gives me phi I plus del I phi bar, and it must also be equal to zero. So the equation of motion tells us that phi I bar equals to minus del I W, and phi I equals to minus del I W bar. So now if I look at the, so this would be, this is minus potential energy for my scalar fields, right? Because the Lagrangian is kinetic term minus potential energy. So this minus potential energy, I can just substitute the equation of motion for phi sub I. So then what I will have? I will have del I W absolute value squared. That will be the first term. Now the second term gives me minus del I W squared. Okay, so this was first term, this was second term, this is third term, first, second, third, del I, absolute value squared, the same. So again, what I'm doing, I'm just looking at that Lagrangian that we have there and substituting the equations of motion for F sub I and F sub I bar. So what you find is that it's minus del W absolute value squared. So what we discover with you, that a potential for scalars in supersymmetric models for arbitrary superpotential takes this form. So it's del I W squared. So this is a formula that you should recall in quantum mechanics. We derived very similar expression. And so you can see, we can make some general comments, but you can see that, for example, I guess I have to make those comments now. Let me see. Do I want, yes, I want to make those comments now. So the first comment is that our potential is bounded from below. The second comment, remember that we have an unbroken supersymmetry. The energy of the ground state must be equal to zero. So if SUSY is unbroken, so if SUSY is unbroken, potential energy must be equal to zero in a vacuum, okay, for a vacuum state. So the question is, where do we have a vacuum? And so you can see from this expression that you have a vacuum when del WI, del IW equal to zero for all I, right? Where index I runs over your chiral superfield. However, you can recall that this is the same as Fi. So the second comment is, in order to have again, so what we are talking here about, perturbative supersymmetric vacuum, right? Because that's the words that we were saying when we started perturbative quantum mechanics, even though we later learned that we have to be careful. But in quantum field theory, unfortunately, well, in some supersymmetric quantum models, we can do better. But most of the time, we cannot do better than perturbation theory. So in order to have a perturbative SUSY vacuum, so the F terms, F sub I's, must be equal to zero in that vacuum. So this is known as the F term condition. F term condition. So if you read papers on supersymmetry and people are asking where do we have a supersymmetric vacuum, you might hear words like F-term conditions and D-term conditions. So we already know what the F-term condition is. So the F-term condition is a condition that the F-terms will vanish, and vanishing of the F-terms is important because a scalar potential is quadratic in these F terms. Now, what's D terms? We will learn later when we study supersymmetric gauge series. Okay? So in principle, so you have to understand that this F sub I equal to zero, it's a function of scalar superfields. And so sometimes what could happen is that you have a multiple solutions. You don't have a single solution, but you have a multiple solution. So sometimes, so that those are complicated polynomial equations. And sometimes, and we'll look at specific examples, not this time, maybe later, sometimes have these equations have multiple solutions. Well, sometimes it doesn't have any solution at all. Then we will say, much like we said in supersymmetric quantum mechanics, the supersymmetry is spontaneously broken. But if it has multiple solutions, then a space of solutions, so a set of all values of phi sub I for which the F terms vanish is what people call a moduli space. A moduli space of a model. Since you've heard the words moduli space very often by now, so you might imagine that moduli spaces are rather common in supersymmetric models. And we will see that that's indeed the case. So moduli space, it's just that, again, as I said, it's multiple for now. We will understand better physical meaning of that. But for now, it's just the vacuum. There is not unique supersymmetric vacuum, and there is a continuous family of supersymmetric vacuum. And so once we have a continuous family of something, it must be parametrized by something. So the thing that parametrizes the continuous family of supersymmetric vacuum is moduli. So when we say a moduli space, means that there is a continuous family of vacua in a model. Okay? So again, this typically is a feature, so we can see these features at a perturbative level. Typically, non-perturbatively, what happens is that we have isolated vacua, much like in supersymmetric quantum mechanics. On the other hand, if we go to series with extended supersymmetry, then we have really moduli spaces of this solution. The same applies actually to string models. So if we look at the string constructions, because if we ask what is the low energy effective action of a string theory, it will, in the models where we can have a control, will lead to the supersymmetric effective action, which will be a subject we will start discussing today, what the effective action is. But anyway, it will be some supersymmetric model. And depending how many supersymmetries we have, we either will have a continuous family of vacua or we have isolated vacua. So models which have four supercharges, minimal supersymmetry, the ones that we thought that we are discussing in this course, those models have typically isolated vacua. If we have models with more than four supercharges, then we have this moduli space of solution. Okay. But in due time, we'll talk about that. Right, guys, so any other thing I have to mention here? Yes? No? No. All right, so any question about this? Okay, one thing that I forgot, what happens with the fermionic terms, okay? So what happens with these fermionic terms? So we showed how the potential arises. So you might imagine that we can have phi to the fourth field theory. We will study supersymmetric extension of phi to the fourth field theory in a second. But what I want to mention is that, for example, these terms of W, right, psi I, psi j, so what you have here is a scalar which couples to a fermion bilinear. So those terms will give, in principle, those will be fermion bilinear terms in your Lagrangians. And so those are the mass terms. The mass terms. And those are the terms that will give rise to Yukawa couplings. At the end, you have heard that there is a supersymmetric extension of a standard model, and the standard model has Yukawa coupling. So we better be able to supersymmetrically extend it. And in fact, so the Yukawa couplings and the fermion mass term, if we were to have ones, we don't, in the standard model, at least the general notion is that they masses arise due to Higgs mechanism. So, but in principle, mass terms and Yukawa coupling will always come from this piece. Okay? So, good. So, any questions about this simple model? Now, this model has an arbitrary complicated generalization, and that will, that is known as a nonlinear sigma model. Nonlinear sigma model. So a nonlinear sigma model, of course it is a supersymmetric nonlinear sigma model. I can write down for you easily what it is. Actually, I wrote it on this blackboard. So somewhere, I can write it one more time. So it's d4 theta k of phi I bar plus integral d2 theta w of phi I plus Hermitian conjugate. So that's a nonlinear sigma model where k and w are arbitrary. So in fact, what we were discussing so far, we were discussing the simplest example of a nonlinear sigma model. We were discussing an example of a nonlinear sigma model where our Keller potential was of this type. So it was just a simple bilinear of chiral and anti-chiral superfields. But you can repeat all of this, and it's a very tedious exercise. But it's possible to do. It's very straightforward. And I could have made you this as a homework assignment, but that would be like, I don't know whether the difficulty of doing that compared to the difficulty of, say, computing two-loop beta function in gauge theory, which one is worse. Neither of them is nice, so I'm not going to ask you to do that. But I'm just going to give you the answer so that you will see what the structures will appear. It's still straightforward. Basically, what you have to do is just do Taylor series extensions, be careful, and repeat everything that we did in this simpler model. Yes.
Where
did
the name come from, sigma model?
Because, you know, the... So let's step back, and where does sigma models come from?
Well, sigma models come from because they were formed... I don't know whether that's what gives a name to it, but there are models that people discussed in the context of particle theory, and they involve sigma fields, and they involve the non-canonical kinetic terms. So let me mention what I mean. And so this is sigma model, which is a useful thing because then you can make an analogy. So normally, if you have a scalar field, okay, so if I were to have a sigma scalar field, then this would be a normal kinetic term, right? So, well, if it is a real field, I guess I would have 1/2, but I can generalize it. So in order to make this into, so this will be, if you wish, a linear sigma model, okay? Or, you know, just in this case, I'm just looking at kinetic term. But I can make it into an interesting non-interacting theory by saying that a kinetic term, what I have here is an arbitrary function of sigma. And then there is still these two derivatives. So it's a two derivative action, but the kinetic term depends on the field itself, okay? So so this is a typical kinetic term in complicated nonlinear sigma models, okay? So remember I told you that the Keller potential, the Keller potential can never give rise to non-derivative interactions. So for example, here, if you assume that this function has some Taylor series expansion, right? So what you will see, if I will expand it, well, there will probably be a constant, say one. So this constant will give me just a standard kinetic term. But then the higher order terms, right, then there will be a term of this type, sigma del mu sigma. So this term is an interaction, but it's a derivative interaction, okay? So it's precisely what will happen if you go from a simple Keller potential like this, and if you make an arbitrary Keller potential, an arbitrary function. What will happen is that you will never get a non-derivative interaction, right? So you will not get mass terms, you will not get Yukawa couplings, but you will typically get interactions of this type, interactions that involve derivatives. And that's what will come after you do this exercise. So I'm just gonna write down the answer, what will be at the end of this exercise if you evaluate all the fermionic integrals. Okay, so it's too long to write it down, so I'm just gonna write down some small pieces of it. I guess what I'm gonna do, So this piece we did in all generality, right? So the only thing that we didn't write in general was the integral of a Keller potential, d for theta of k. So it turns out that it takes this beautiful form. Well, first of all, it's always bilinear in, it's always quadratic in f sub I. So it takes this form. I will explain what the symbols mean here. Fi, f bar, ja, and then minus 1/2 fi, gi, I bar, gamma, I bar, jk, psi bar, j bar, psi bar of k bar, and those are bars as well. And then there will be other terms, okay?
First term, G, I bar, H, G, F, I. Oh, sorry, sorry. It must be I bar, I will take.
So all the indices must be contracted. Actually, as far as, F terms concerned, those are all the things that can appear. There will be just a complex conjugate. There will be a Hermitian conjugate of this guy, and that's all the F terms that can appear. So one thing is something that I mentioned before is that even for the most general case, for the most general Keller potential, the F terms will be non-dynamical. They will never have a kinetic term, and they enter quadratically. So what are those GI? This is a metric on a space of scalar field, on a space of scalar fields. And that's related to the questions that you asked some time ago. Why is that is called a Keller potential? So if I think of my scalar fields as a coordinate on some auxiliary manifold, then that function k of the scalar fields is just a Keller potential, standard Keller potential for that complex manifold. And so there is a formula. How does, if you give me on a complex manifold, on a Keller manifold, if you give me a potential, a Keller potential, what is the metric? So this Gij is a metric on a manifold parametrized by scalar fields. And so this is just del I bar of the Keller potential. Okay, so basically this is a metric on a Keller manifold parametrized by phi I, phi bar, I bar. Okay, so this is like, it's a complex manifold. It has a holomorphic coordinate, phi I, has anti-holomorphic coordinates. There is a Keller potential. There is a function defined on this manifold. And there is a, if the manifold is Keller, then the metric on this manifold is completely determined by this function. So, but notice if this is the case, okay, so this is a function of phi I bar. Now, this guy is just a, this is a Christoffel connection on the Keller manifold. I can write down the expression for it. I bar, J bar, K bar. So this is G I bar. And then I have G I J bar, comma K bar. So a comma means that I have to take a derivative. So there are complicated formulas. So there is an expression on a Keller manifold, again, in terms of pretty much I can write it down in terms of Keller potential for the Ricci scale and Riemann tensor and so on. So the bottom line is that after we integrate out, much like we did before, we can integrate these auxiliary fields F sub I. What we will get? What we will get is an effective action of this type. So we will get a Lagrangian L, which is minus GI I bar. And then here I have phi I, del mu phi I. Now I have to keep track of the indices. I told you that in a more complicated model, I need to keep track of indices. So now I need to raise and lower indices I and I bar using this metric on a Keller manifold. So here is phi bar of I bar. So this is a kinetic term for scalars, right? And notice that this has exactly the same form as in a nonlinear sigma model, because G I bar is a function of this scalar field. Okay, so it has a complicated kinetic term. I can write it down exactly because at the end of the day, once you integrate out everything, it gets back to a fairly closed form. Okay, so it's psi bar, sigma bar mu, del mu psi I, and then there is plus a quarter. This is a Riemann tensor on written in complex coordinates on a Keller manifold. So it's, if you wish, a Riemann tensor computed with respect to this Keller metric. So it couples to a four fermion term, psi bar, J bar, psi bar, L bar, and I have a bar here, okay? So the only thing that is not explained on the blackboard is this d mu. So a d mu is a covariant derivative, right? So it's a normal derivative, but it's also modified by a connection. So del mu phi sub k psi j. Okay? So the statement is that you take an arbitrary Keller potential, you evaluate the d4 theta, and that's what you will get. Okay? So I guess I have to say here that suppose you wouldn't know Keller geometry at all, then you would have discovered after a very long way that all the structures that appear here actually related to this auxiliary manifold, which happen to have all its geometric properties encoded in a Keller potential. Yes?
I'm just confused with the last problem. Is that
which one? This one?
Yeah, acting on.
So this one, this is a derivative here. I guess it acts to say acts on the psi, right? So it acts here, the mu psi I. So how long this formula collapses to the case we know, right? So to the case we know, if a scalar potential phi I bar, right, that's what we did with you before, then the metric Gij bar, Gii bar, is just conical delta II bar, right? So then this guy simply disappears. Those two indices become the same, right? So in this case, this guy disappears. D mu becomes just del mu, because if we have a flat manifold, right? So it's a flat manifold. All the Christopher connection on this manifold will vanish. Christopher connection, as you can see, both derivatives with respect to metric. So if a metric is constant, it's just one. It's this conical symbol. It's a constant, so all the connections will vanish. So this just becomes del mu. And the Riemann tensor on the flat manifold vanished as well. So in the simplest model that we did, we never had this full pattern. So this is a nonlinear sigma model. If on top of this, I will just add those two terms that we discussed before. Right? So those were discussed for arbitrary superposition. So there is no changes there at all. And so all the statements that we have been making about F terms and about scalar potential, they still hold in this case, because as far as potential is concerned, notice that those are only kinetic terms.
I have a question about the last term that you were
this one?
No, the line below.
This one?
Yes. I mean, what is that animal? I mean, you have a connection.
Yeah.
Basically, you have the Kellermann manifold, fiber, where you base manifold, and then you have a connection here, which is the.
Well, if you call a base manifold our space time.
Yeah.
So in some sense, what you see here is that there is a twist, what they mean a spatial derivative.
Yeah.
And the twist comes from this auxiliary Kellermann manifold. Right, because so the twist meaning that you somehow mix the spatial coordinates with this additional auxiliary coordinates of the with the coordinates of this auxiliary manifold, and those coordinates are the scalar twist phi. It just comes up, so this beautiful mathematical structure just comes from nothing but saying I have the general Kellermann potential, and I'm just going to compute B for theta. So I'm just going to expand it. I mean, there is no new, there is nothing new you need to do in order to derive this, to know.
Yeah, that's one important.
Yeah, so it's really, right, so as you said, it's a twist. So there is it's not a normal covariant derivative, right? Because the space-time manifold is still flat. We are not starting with quantum field theory in terms of space-time. First of all, if we were to do that, then it would have been more difficult to formulate the supersymmetry and so on. So the space-time itself, where the nonlinear sigma model lives, is flat. But the derivative, in particular the derivatives that have confermions, that's only for the fermions. Okay, they are twisted by the scalar t. And the structure that you have here is not something that you can avoid. If you want to have a supersymmetric action, then it's forced on you. So if, for example, you would have done this, you would keep all the things, but you would have done this, remove this, or remove these terms, then you would have found that the action is not in the end on the supersymmetry location. It would have taken us maybe a couple of weeks to figure it out, because the computations would have been really horrendous, right? To figure out why, if you think it's really complicated, there is an arbitrary metric on a manifold, and what we have here is a Riemann tensor, and somehow this Riemann tensor is important in order to preserve supersymmetry. So the whole beauty of the superfield formalism is that it guarantees me in a, there is a general framework that allows me to construct supersymmetric actions, and I'm guaranteed that under the supersymmetry variation that will be a total derivative. All right. Very good. So, so this in the last couple of minutes. So this was a nonlinear sigma model, and there is a special case of a nonlinear sigma model, and it's actually even special case of the model that we discussed before that. That's called the Bezzumino model. So let's talk about it now. A special case
of non-linear sigma model is Bezzumino model. So a Bezzumino model is a model where for a Keller potential, we take the one that we did before, phi sub i bar. And moreover, we will look at a simple superpotential. And remember that before we did an arbitrary superpotential, but now we can look at a specific superpotential. And so this specific superpotential takes forms phi I plus mu ij phi I phi j plus lambda ijk phi I phi j phi k. Okay, so that's what is known as a Bezzumino model. So this mu I, just one sec, mu ij, lambda ijk are couplings. So arbitrary parameters in order for me to define this model. Yes?
I was going to ask, but the first thing, the mu i was. It's mu sub I is just a constant. Okay, so if you wish, this is another trivial function of chiral superfield W. And what I did
the most general Taylor series expansion. I could have, okay, this would have been the most general. But that doesn't matter, because remember, the superpotential, when we evaluate the action, we always take a derivative of the superpotential. That's why the constant term doesn't matter. Okay? Never enters in action. Okay? There is a reason why I did not go further. I could have said, well, this is an arbitrary function, so why did you stop at the third term? So what we will discuss tomorrow and in next time is that actually this is the most general form if I want to look at quantum field theory which are renormalizable. So the next lecture will be about renormalize. I want to give a very brief introduction to the idea of effective field theory and renormalization in quantum field theories. So this up to cubic would lead to renormalizable quantum field theories, okay? So if I were to take an X term, it will no longer be renormalizable. So let's see roughly what we'll have and why those terms have these nice names, for example, mu, and lambda. So just in order for you to develop an intuition, what those terms stand for, well, let's look at the scalar potential, right? So first of all, let's simplify. Suppose we have a single field, right? So if we have a single field, then our superpotential will take this form plus mu phi squared plus lambda phi cubed, okay? And so given this superpotential, I can compute a scalar potential So we derive the formula that a scalar potential is absolute value of a superpotential squared. So this will be absolute value mu plus mu phi plus lambda phi squared. Okay? So for example, in the cases that you can look, nu equals zero, lambda equals to zero, potential for phi will be absolute value of mu squared, phi, phi bar. Okay, so this is just a mass term. This would be mass term. Okay? So, yes?
Yeah, sorry. I missed two here, I missed three here.
So that would be four. So this is just a mass term. Or we can look at the other example. So I can take mu equal to zero. For example, I can set mu equal to zero. And then the potential will be nine, absolute value lambda squared, absolute value of phi to the fourth. So this is our complex lambda phi to the fourth field theory. Okay, so it's part of a Vesumino model, and what we did, we constructed a supersymmetric extension. Of course, I can just choose two of them, and then that will give me a mass term for scalar as well. So the first. So you might ask, what's the first coefficient nu is doing? Well, again, you can just expand, and you will see that you can see that if you have it, it's actually very bad, okay? Because if you have it, you don't have a supersymmetric vacuum at phi equals zero. Remember, so in order for you to have a supersymmetric vacuum, this guy must be equal to zero, but this is not equal to zero at phi equals to zero. So if I want to have a supersymmetric vacuum at zero, then I don't want this term. So this term, I guess what I want to say is that, so this would typically break SUSY at phi equal to zero, at the origin of the field. Of the field space. It doesn't necessarily mean that there will not be a supersymmetric vacuum, because much like in a Higgs mechanism, there can be a true vacuum somewhere away in the field space. So here, it could happen as well. Also notice that this nu can be absorbed by a field redefinition. At least when lambda equals to zero, right? So the way how this is done is the following. So I have a superpotential nu phi plus mu phi squared. So I can write this down as mu phi plus nu over two mu squared minus nu squared over four mu, and I can declare this to be my new chiral superfield phi hat. And then I get rid of the first term. So if you think what I did, I really found just a new supersymmetric vacuum away from the origin in a scalar space. Well, it's just more complicated. You have to look more carefully if lambda is not equal to zero. All right, guys, so again, to summarize, we are done more or less with chiral superfields. What we showed how to generalize lambda phi to the fourth quantum field theory. So what I'm going to do next time is we're going to discuss